Thanks for listening to this Eastlake podcast. Everything we do is supported by the generous donations of our local and online community. If you love what Eastlake is up to, we'd encourage you to contribute by visiting eastlakecc.com. We hope you enjoy this week's message.
Thanks, Heather. Last time I spoke the week before Heather. And then this time she spoke the week before me, and I was thinking about how the last time when I finished, I went into the resource room and I was like, ha ha, now it's on you, you have to go now. And then this last week, she saw me after service last week, and she's like, can I help you this week? Do you want me to take care of your kid? So, just hope you guys have friends that are more like Heather than me, because apparently she's way nicer. Well, like she said, my name's Kristen. I'm excited to be here today. I'm going to start out being honest and telling you that it's been a little bit of a rough week for me. A couple of things that went on. First, I was fired from part of my job here. That is to say that David Lunsford told me I'm no longer able to do announcements because I'm so pregnant that I can't breathe. And so you won't see me doing that, which I find interesting because that's like 4 minutes long and this is like 30. So we'll see how it goes. Maybe sitting down will help. My whole family has been sick. My husband was sick first, and then my son was sick, and this week I was rocking him, and he looked over to the right, and I saw like 2 lumps in his neck, which of course for me, I was like, my son is dying of cancer. Oh my gosh, what are we doing? So it was like multiple calls to the doctor, a doctor's appointment where they said, no, he doesn't have cancer, he has a cold. So that was fun. I'm now sick, so excuse me if I cough or have a fit while I'm up here. I practiced with the tech team before where I was like, if I go like this, it means I'm gonna cough, so mute the microphone. And then also last weekend was Mother's Day. Hopefully you guys celebrated and had a great time. My husband and I had a miscommunication about my expectations for the day. And so I spent all Sunday crying. And my sweet husband, once I was able to calm down and we were able to figure out that, you know, the myth of communication is that it has occurred. And so once we figured out kind of where the miscommunication was, he was so sweet and apologized and said, well, can we do like a redo? And so yesterday we did a redo of Mother's Day. We did the things that I wanted to do, which was get donuts with our son and go to the park and enjoy the sun. And then clean out my car, which is like the thing I wanted to do. But so yesterday was really busy, and then on top of all that, I'm speaking today. So that was just kind of like looming in the back of my mind. And I think it's funny because Ryan asked me to speak on ordinary spirituality in the dailies of our lives. And I honestly think he gave me that topic because my life is a little chaotic right now and he wanted to make sure I'm doing okay. And I appreciate the question though, which is essentially, are you seeing God in the everydays of your life? Because it's really easy not to. Like I said, I have a son, he's 1.5. I'm pregnant, I'm having a baby 6 weeks from tomorrow, not like I'm counting or anything. I work here, which is more chaotic than any job I've ever had before in my life. My husband just started a new job, and he is gone from about 7 in the morning till 5 or 5:30 at night. And the way it has worked out in our family is that I'm the one responsible for food, clothing, and housing for everyone in our family. And I just spend most of my days tired and trying to get to the next thing. And I'm pretty sure I just described what most of your lives are like, maybe not the mom-husband thing. But for most of us, we spend our days just trying to get to the next thing and hoping that everything doesn't fall apart on the way. Our culture very much values productivity and doing in our daily life, which makes spirituality something that we have to try to fit in. So when asked to teach on ordinary spirituality, I had to kind of pause for a little bit and maybe laugh for a second, because honestly, I'm just trying to remember to eat lunch every day and make sure that my kid has clean pajamas at night. So when you ask me to put spirituality on top of that, that can seem like a large task. But it can seem large depending on what you think spirituality is. And thinking through that over the last few weeks, And I guess years being here has been really helpful for me. It's opened my brain, my heart, and my days to seeing God and viewing things differently. You see, for most of my life, spirituality in my daily life meant the following things: attending and volunteering at church, reading my Bible, being a part of Bible studies, prayer, and having conversations with other people about God, essentially also trying to make sure that they think the right things. And there were certain and specific ways to do these things that were the right way, and those who did them the most were considered spiritual leaders among us. I also remember people saying, well, I'm spiritual but not religious. And in my church setting, those people were lost. They were people who didn't want to commit to Jesus because they sort of wanted to still do their own thing. But ever since I've started to realize that maybe, just maybe, I didn't know everything there was to know about God when I was 18 years old, I've become more open to new ideas and realized that much of what I believe was still what other people believe. We just use different words to describe it. And words are important. And so with a big word like spirituality that I'm going to be talking about for this whole time today, I needed to make sure I was clear on what I was talking about. And it's not that hard to understand, but let's just make sure we're all on the same page. Spiritual, very simple, is of or relating to a person's spirit. Spirit, the principle of conscious life, the vital principle in humans, animating the body or mediating between body and soul. And I love that phrase, animating the body. It reminds me of the scripture in Genesis where it says, "And Jehovah God formed man of the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living soul." Now, no matter what you believe about creation or the origin of the human species, I still think this picture is beautiful, showing us that what is inside of our body, what is unique to human beings, is what is truly life. That is our spirit. That's what God gave to us. And now I realize this is not new information, but I want to make sure we're starting at the same place together. When we talk about spirituality, we're talking about the core of who we are as humans. What makes me, me? What makes you, you? What makes us, us? It's the vital principle in humans, which is why we're wrapping the Human Condition series by talking this through. So how did it end up then that my definitions of spirituality were things to do or tasks to accomplish? Measurements of maturity and leadership. Is that really what we've broken down spirituality to mean? Things we need to do and things we need to learn in order to be seen a certain way. I think that is actually religion. And religion can be spiritual, but it's how we organize around spirituality. It's not spirituality itself. Spirituality is built of our attempts at figuring out and tending to our own souls or spirit. And in doing that, it cannot be separated from the one who created them. And figuring that out, that tending, is a beautiful process, but it can sometimes be turned into something not so beautiful. Like I said, it can be turned into measurements and tasks, even worse, systems of judgment. And today, my hope is to remind us all, myself included, that you cannot separate spirituality from the dailies of your life. It is who you are. It's not that some people are spiritual and others are not. As Chardin wrote, we are not human beings having a spiritual experience. We are spiritual beings having a human experience. One of the great things about being a new parent is that I get to see my son's spirit unfold from the very beginning. He's only one, but he's very much himself already. And Bob Goff had a great quote that was said here a long time ago, and I remember reading it, and it sticking with me before I had kids. And he said, our job as a parent is to get down on our knees, look our children in the eyes, and ask them, who are you? Who do you want to be? My job is to try to help my son live into who he already is at his core, his spirit, who I believe God made him to be. And in a sense, isn't that what we should be doing for ourselves as well? You already are a spiritual being. You don't have to work to create that. but you might have to work at recognizing it and tending to it. And I think that's the core of spirituality in our everyday life. Tending to and recognizing the spirit in ourselves and in others around us, and how that spirit is always connected to the source that created it. So that's what I want to talk about today. First of all, the spirit in ourselves. For me, recognizing and tending to the spirit in myself essentially means knowing who I am and tending my connection to the one who created me. For most of us who are in this kind of a church setting, we call that creator God. Some call it source, some say universe, reality. There are other names for God too. But I believe that God is love, and love is what drove and continues to drive all of creation, and love is what makes creation good. In simple words, I think tending to the spirit in ourselves means being awake to the fact that God's loving presence is all around us. Because when we notice and see that God is all around us, it enlivens our spirit. It gives us peace. It gives us purpose. And I think that's why spirituality was initially packaged within the things I spoke of earlier, the church, prayer, Bible, etc., because those were the things that traditionally were sure to point us to God and connect us to God. And those things themselves are not bad. They are a part of my spirituality and yours. You're here today. But if we're going to believe that this loving, godly presence is around us at all times, then we should be able to connect with it at all times just because of who we are, not through having to open a book or go to a certain building. And I think this is what Jesus may have been referring to when asked what the greatest commandment was. And he said, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all of your soul, and with all of your mind." And I don't know about you, I've often wondered, like, how do I do that? I don't even know what that means. But the whole idea of tending has made this maybe just like a little more clear to me. If we imagine ourselves as gardeners for a moment, which is hard to do for me, everything green dies at my house, but we're to take those aspects of ourselves, our heart, our soul, our mind, and make sure they're growing towards light, life, and love, towards God. And this all sounds very ethereal, like mind, heart, soul, light, love. So let's break it down. What does this mean for spirituality in my daily life? The idea of tending to my spirit with my heart means I try to be aware of my feelings, all of them, and not let my emotions take over. This, you guys, is a spiritual thing. When I am frustrated with my child, it's a spiritual moment to stop, take a breath, and say in my head, "He is 1 year old. He is not doing this on purpose. I love him. I will not take my frustration out on him." I actually had the opportunity to do that this morning before I got here. Same with my husband. I can say, "He is 39 years old. I'm pretty sure he's not doing this on purpose, but I love him and I will not take my frustration out on him." With my soul, I try to find my truest, best self, that which is real, apart from ego, throughout the experiences of my day. This involves mainly self-control, where I have to stop and ask myself, what am I trying to do here? Where is the real me, and how can it come out in this experience? With my mind, I try to notice my thoughts and stop myself from going down negative pathways in my head. I think of 2 Corinthians 10:5 that says, "We demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God, and we take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ." That's kind of an intense verse, but I like the idea of taking captive our thoughts and directing them back to the way of love. There's power in our mind. And every time we're able to direct our feelings, the core of who we are, and our thoughts back to the way of Jesus, to the way of love in the world, we connect with this Spirit of God. It's like a puzzle piece that clicks into place every time we're able to do it. Because that is what we're trying to do with our life. At least that's what we say we're gathering around here. Be followers of Jesus in a world that doesn't often look like love. So, when I grumble about having to do laundry, and I want to throw my husband's construction clothes out in the street because they bring sawdust and washers and nails into my machine, there's a chance for a spiritual connection there. When I can stop and notice and breathe and say, you know what, I'm so thankful my husband has a job, that we have a machine that washes clothes for us, that I have a body that can move things from here to there, I feel gratitude and I thank God. And that terrible selfish moment is turned towards light. When my day gets crazy and I'm running behind and I'm realizing I forgot something and nothing seems to be going right, there's a chance for a spiritual connection. When I can stop and breathe and remind myself, I have so much to be thankful for. I'm so thankful there's so many things that I want to do with my day. There are so many things that interest me and things that I want to be a part of that bring meaning to my life. And I stop and I feel purpose and I thank God. And that terrible selfish moment is turned to light. When we tend to our spirits by guiding our hearts, souls, and minds back to love in the monotonous, boring, frustrating, regular parts of our day, we get that connection. And we're reminded that the world is a beautiful place and that God is all around us and can actually meet us in our everyday life. We don't have to go to where we think God is. God just is. And you know, I see it so often in myself and in others. We get so worried about our thoughts about spirituality, our theology, our perceptions of God. Are we getting it right? How do I know if this is God or not? And we turn spirituality into a correctness search because we're so terrified of getting it wrong. And that framework can be so harsh and can actually keep us from what we're searching for. Because those thoughts and fears keep us from experiencing God in the here and now, in the moments I just spoke of. Barbara Brown Taylor wrote a book called An Altar in the World. I read it to prepare for this message, and I would love for you to consider reading it too. It's a beautiful, poetic, easy read about encountering God in the world around you and in the places where you wouldn't expect. I actually cried through the introduction and the first chapter because the way that she wrote somehow spoke to the frenzy I was feeling in my soul about belief. But when she writes about altars, because it's called An Altar in the World, she introduces the idea by retelling the story of Jacob from the book of Genesis. And Jacob was running from his family because they were trying to kill him, hence the running. He ends up in the middle of nowhere, feeling afraid and alone and really far from God because he considered God to be where he left. And while he's sleeping, he has an encounter with God. He has this dream, a vision of a ladder coming down from heaven to where he is, and he sees angels going up and down between heaven and earth. He thought he was in the middle of nowhere, far from God, but God showed him differently. And his experience is so profound that he builds an altar right there, and he says, surely God was in this place. And so the author then takes this idea and writes about our own need to build altars, essentially to stop and recognize when we have made a connection with God. And I'm not going to expand any more on the details of Jacob's story, but I want to read you an excerpt from her book about these kinds of encounters. She writes, human beings may separate things into as many piles as we wish, separating spirit from flesh, sacred from secular, church from world. But we should not be surprised when God does not recognize the distinctions we make between the two. Earth is so thick with divine possibility that it is a wonder we can walk anywhere without cracking our shins on altars. Jacob's nowhere, about which he knew nothing, turned out to be the house of God. The vision showed Jacob something he did not know. He slept in the house of God. He woke at the gate of heaven. None of this was his doing. The only thing he did right was to see where he was and say so. Then he turned his pillow into an altar before he set off, praising the God who had come to him where he was. What she's asking essentially is, can you see that God is where you are, even if you feel like you are nowhere? Can you see that God is where you are, even if you feel like you are nowhere? In your daily life, when you feel like you are nowhere important, can you recognize the divine presence that's all around you? In your board meetings, in your laundry, in traffic, in your children, in nature, in your frustration, in your joy. Whatever you experience throughout your day, it is spiritual if you let it be. Tending to your own spirit means being awake to this idea that God is, and you can encounter this love in all and through all. So secondly, tending to the spirit in others. For me, the majority of spirituality in my daily life, I think, comes from my connection to other people and all of my various attempts at loving them, successful or not. This is part of the human condition. We are conscious beings surrounded by other conscious beings, and our actions affect one another, for better or for worse. And I think Jesus was pretty clear in his words, but more so in his actions, that the primary way love is expressed in this world is between one another. And now I could do a whole talk, or like 20, about how to care for the people in our daily life. Most of us spend a majority of our time trying to be better at those things, how to be a better spouse, how to be a better child, how to be a better parent, how to be a better friend, a better coworker, all of those things which are really good to spend time on. But they're not what I want to talk about for the rest of today. Today, I want to talk about the other. The people in our lives who we don't actually know. Mostly because this is just something that I have become acutely aware of in my own life, and if you haven't figured it out, that's what speaking at Eastlake is. We basically just come up here and share about what we're currently working on in our life. But I mentioned the greatest commandment earlier about how Jesus said it is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. And then he continues and says, and love your neighbor as yourself. And when the disciples ask, well, who is my neighbor? Jesus tells a story about a man who cares for a stranger. But if we're honest, I think we can all admit it's hard to love strangers, the other, the fringe people who walk in and out of our lives every day. And honestly, I think it's because we just don't notice them. I felt somewhat convicted about this recently. I live in Seattle, and I do my grocery shopping at the QFC in University Village. And I go there multiple times a week, mostly because it's an outing for me and my son. Sometimes we don't even buy anything. We just go there. And so I go there often. I see people there often. And there's this man who works there, and he bags groceries. And I also see him pulling in the carts from the parking garage. And then, so I've seen him often. And then a couple of weeks ago, my son and I'd walked to a coffee shop in my neighborhood, and I was waiting for my coffee, and I looked outside, and I saw him sitting at a table outside drinking coffee. And I had this moment where I was like, hey, that's the QFC grocery bagger guy. And then I just like felt this conviction, and I was like, no. That is a man enjoying coffee who happens to work at QFC sometimes. And it's a really small distinction. But I realized I had been seeing him as just someone who walked in and out of my fringe, not as like a person who he really was. And honestly, I think if we could get a little bit out of our existential existence, this sort of Truman Show approach to life where everybody who's in our view exists just for us, our world would be so much better. And now I know, I don't think we actually do that on purpose, but we can move through our lives so fast that we are just unaware of the humans around us. That barista does not exist just for you and your coffee. That doctor does not exist just for you and your appointment. That Uber driver does not exist just for you and your date. That teacher does not exist just for you and your child. And that grocery bagger does not exist just for you and your food. And yes, I know, we don't really think that. I know that. But do we treat them like they do just exist for us? Are strangers a cog in the wheel of your daily existence? Do you see them? I had another interesting story about this. Years ago, when we were opening up this building in Bothell, I was driving to church on a Sunday morning, and this was before I worked here, and like I said, I live in Seattle, so I was driving across 520 and then got onto 405 North. There's not that many people on the road on a Sunday morning. But as I was getting down to 405 North, so was someone else, another car. And, like, terrible driver, wasn't going fast enough, came in front of me, and I was like, what are you doing? Go faster. This is the freeway. You know, and I, like, did all of that stuff. Which I've made a lot of progress in that area, by the way. But I was super frustrated. But comes in front of me and proceeds to drive north on 405. I follow that car through Kirkland and continue to go north on 405 into Bothell. The car gets off at the same exit as me, and then I follow that car into the Eastlake parking lot. And I completely disobeyed the parking team, and I let him park like as far, I went like the opposite direction of whoever that was. And I watched him get out of his car, and I was so embarrassed. And it, of course, was like the big guy that led the boot camp group that we used to do here. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm a terrible person. But it was so embarrassing, and it's the same sort of thing, is that this was not a person to me. This was a car in front of me doing a terrible job. But my question is for me, and what I've been trying to ask myself is, do I see them? Do I see that as a person or as a car? And do I see these people not just for what they do for me or what they don't do for me, but as valuable, lovely, worthy human beings? Someone said here a while back, and the quote is also from Mr. Rogers, something that I have remembered. He said, "There isn't anyone you couldn't learn to love once you've heard their story." And I actually want to call bullshit on Mr. Rogers today. Sort of, and I want to do it through running through a little bit of an experience with you, an exercise. So if you would, I would love for you to get comfortable in your seat, and I'm going to ask you if you would close your eyes. I want to ask you some questions to think about. What is one of your earliest memories as a child? Where were you? Who was there? Who was one of your favorite teachers? What was your favorite thing about high school? Who was the first friend who really hurt you? When did you fall in love for the first time? What did it feel like? What was your first job? Did you like it? When you were in your 20s, what were you dreaming about doing with your life? Did you accomplish any of those dreams? Who is the first person you knew who died? How long did it take before you weren't sad anymore? Are you still sad? What about your life has not turned out the way you planned? What about your life has turned out better than you planned? What causes you to be afraid now? What gives you the greatest joy right now? When was the last time you felt like you really experienced God? Okay, you can open your eyes. The reason I did this actually has nothing to do with your own answers. I want to take a moment to point out that everyone in this room has answers to those questions. Now, This might be awkward, but I'm gonna ask you to play along. I want you, in just a moment, to turn around and look at some people in the eye. Go for it now. Look to your right, look to your left. Look people in the eye. They have the same kinds of answers as you. Keep looking. I know it's awkward. They have loved. They have lost. They have dreamt. They have accomplished. They are afraid. You can look up here. Thank you. You don't have to know their story. You just have to see them. Spirituality in my daily life means seeing people, recognizing and loving them for the fact that they have a story, not that I know it. And sure, knowing their story can be helpful in loving them, but you don't need it. Sort of like namaste, the divine in me recognizes the divine in you. Christianity calls this being brothers and sisters in Christ. And that simple fact has changed the way my days go. Part of spirituality in my daily life now means noticing the people around me. And I make myself ask these questions like, I wonder what they're doing. I wonder why they're here. I wonder what happened to them today. Not because I'm actually going to find out the answers, but because it makes me consider them. I see everyone as somewhere on the spiritual journey towards recognizing their full value, that they were created beautifully, and that they're on a journey of trying to connect with God in the midst of this human condition, which is hard. And what if we all looked at people that way? You don't have to know people to know how to treat them in the way of love. You just have to see them. As a staff, we did a meditation a while back where we started the practice of saying in our minds towards people, may you be well, may you be happy, may you find peace. Maybe you try that in your life. So, as I try to wrap up, I just want to say, I realize nothing that I said today is really groundbreaking. Hopefully, you are already better at these things than I am. But what I want to make sure you hear is that spirituality doesn't have to be as hard or as boring as we tend to make it. I wanted today to expand on what Heather said last week, that God's presence is in everything. And if you restrict him to act or be felt by you in only specific ways or within certain contexts and paradigms, you can miss out. If you hear anything today, I want you to hear this. God's loving presence is everywhere, in everyone, and the point of your life is to connect with it. Let me say that again. God's loving presence is everywhere, in everyone, and the point of your life is to connect with it. And I might get a little soapboxy here, which is unusual for me, but I also want you to hear this. The point of your life is to connect with it, and no one can tell you exactly how to do that or whether or not you have. I'm not sure how we got to this place in the church world, but we very much find ourselves in a community of church people in our world who are busy just pointing fingers and saying, this way, not that way, we're right, you're wrong. No, don't use those words. Say this, believe that. We have people spouting verses and hailing creeds as if words could ever fully contain the God of the universe. And that bothers me immensely. Because let's not forget, the whole Bible itself is full of stories of people after people encountering God in new and unexplainable ways. Jacob had a dream about a ladder, and suddenly God wasn't restricted to a tent. Peter had a vision about animals, and suddenly the Gentiles were all in. All of us were in. John's vision of Revelation was so overwhelming and so profound that he couldn't even describe it. It's full of statements that are like, it was as if, it was like. And I'm sure those things made religious people unhappy in that day, in the same way that religious people can get unhappy today. But no one gets to disagree with you, When you have an experience, a connection with God that produces fruit in your life and leads you to say, surely God was in this place. So you just build your altar. Be thankful for God, regardless of what other people say. Do not restrict God or let other people do that or tell you how you can experience him in your daily life. Just go and experience God. So as you're able, would you stand with me? I just want to say, man, I did it. I made it through. I'm still breathing. May you go today being aware that this loving presence is all around you. And your life, the point of your life is to connect with it. And if it grows you in the ways that look more like Jesus, then I think you're on the right path. Go in peace. Thank you for being here today.